are listening to the Elephant in the Room podcast with your host, Sutta Singh. Each week, we will bring you a diverse range of inspiring speakers on issues of inequality and inequity. You will hear stories about fairness, justice, belonging, and about best practice for creating a more inclusive workplace. So, if you are an individual or leader interested in a fairer, equitable, compassionate society and workplace, this podcast is for you.
My guest on the Elephant in the Room podcast this week is Corey Kamgoz, PRCA's Director of Communications and Marketing. In the last 18 months, he has played a key role in shaping the industry's response to the COVID-19 pandemic. Corey also leads the association's work on equality and inclusion, which recently included changes to the PRCA's governance structure and the establishment of the PRCA Race and Ethnicity Equity Board. He began his career at a PR agency in New York and spent 7 years at the CIPR before joining the PRCA last year. Good afternoon, Corey. Brilliant to have you as a guest on the Elephant in the Room podcast. Thank you for being here today.
Thank you very much. It's a pleasure to be with you.
To start with, tell us something about your background and your journey to the PRCA.
Sure. So I graduated back in 2008, really at the height of the financial crisis. So I graduated from English at a time where there were very few jobs available, not just in public relations, but in the economy generally. So I undertook quite a wide range of internships. I worked on placements and internships in charities like ActionAid and also at the Department of Work Press Office before going back to university. So I went back to uni the following year and I did a master's in media and communications at Brunel. And then a few months later, I moved out to New York and I joined an agency called Tiberin Strategic Advisors, who are kind of a healthcare / financial services firm. And I worked with them for about 6 months before moving back to London and then joining the CIPR, where I stayed for almost, 7 years in total in various roles, working in policy and then latterly as PR manager for 3 years and then joined PRCA in 2019. So it's been about 10 years in total now since I started.
Wow, a decade in already. So last year, you've been here at the PRCA at one of the busiest times, right? The PRCA was really quick to respond to BLM and making changes to its board and conferring standing committee status. Everyone knows of the outcomes that the Race and Ethnicity Equity Board was set up and the board itself was structured. But nobody knows how and what went behind the scenes. So how did REAB come about and what was the thinking?
Yes, it was a really interesting time. So I think, obviously, that the events of last summer really kind of accelerated the appetite for change and the urgency that everyone felt. I think, to be honest with you, the industry has been well aware of the need for change on diversity, inclusion, and you're asking specifically about race and ethnicity. And I think that the awareness of the need for change has been there, and it's been something that people have spoken about and committed to in various ways. But what we saw last summer was a kind of a massive accelerant in the urgency of it. So I've worked on diversity inclusion issues and initiatives for the best part of around 8 years in various capacities. It was something that I worked on while I was at the CIPR as well. And as I said, I think there's been some good initiatives and some good work that's taken place, but last summer just kind of really heightened the need for genuine and meaningful change. So for us, what that meant was really creating something brand new. We wanted to create something that was not only championing best practice in the industry and making sure that we were providing all the opportunities for Black, Asian, and ethnically diverse professionals that we could, but also something that would help keep us accountable as well as an association. And I remember, I think you were part of that, the first meeting of REAB where we were discussing kind of ambitions and what we wanted to do. And it was quite rightly pointed out to us by the committee itself that our board was unanimously white at the PRCA. And that was something that was indicative of the problems that we were trying to solve. So it was down to us to address that situation. And it's something that we managed to do quite quickly, although we're still at the very early stages of that process. I think we're now up to about 20% of our board who are from diverse backgrounds. So it's something that we are increasingly conscious of, and REAP really has guided our efforts on that. And I think that in turn gave those volunteers the confidence and the assurances that we were serious about this being something genuinely grounded in creating meaningful change for the industry.
Absolutely. I think there is a lot of faith that REAP is not just another committee or another group, and it's not just a tick box. There is the weight behind it of the PRCA, the standing committee status. So there is a lot of accountability, as you mentioned. And you also spoke about the board and that a number of board members stepped down to make way for a more representative board. What is the story behind that? We know that a lot of very senior people volunteered to step down. So who were these people? And these were the enablers who were really waiting, probably ready to make the change and enable that change. What is the story behind that?
Yeah, I think it's important to know that everybody on the board as it was and indeed as it is now, really acknowledged the gravity of the situation. And as I said at the beginning, I think what happened last summer was really a wake-up call. And I think people have been aware and cognizant of these issues for a number of years. There was a renewed sense of urgency, and that was felt by members of our board as well. And as you quite rightly point out, there were a number of people who made the decision to step down. People like Tony Langham at Lansons is a good example of that. And I think what that did was create space for other people to join. And those people, as you've quite rightly pointed out, we owe them our thanks, but we are also increasingly aware that it's what should happen and it's the change that needs to happen if the industry is serious about moving on and taking a real stride forward when it comes to race and ethnicity in PR.
I think this is a very good example of walking the talk, which is brilliant, which is what we need more of our agencies and organizations to be doing. So the PRCA has achieved a lot in the last year and done so much. And all of you have been so busy. We've seen from the events, the initiatives, the campaigns. When you look back, what are the memorable moments or the scary moments? Because there's so much that all of you undertook.
Yeah, there are many, probably more scary than the members, if I'm being honest. I would say, I mean, obviously we went through what every organization went through at the outset of the pandemic, which was flat out fear and uncertainty, really. We furloughed quite a large number of staff members and unfortunately had to make redundancies as well. So that was a really tough time. Tough for the people that have been furloughed, but it was also tough for the staff who were still there, really. And delivering more output, more campaigns, more events than ever before, but just with fewer people on hand. So it was a very difficult time. I've got two small children at home as well. So it was, particularly when the schools were closed, it was a really, really tough time. So that was definitely the hardest point, I would say. Another point that sticks out was not long after, really, our first major virtual conference, which was the International Summit, which took place in May of last year. That was a real game changer for us because it was the industry's first virtual conference. There was a certain amount of trepidation over how it would work and whether we'd be able to deliver it on the scale we wanted to with quite a depleted team. But in the end, we put on a really great event. We had 700 people join across 2 days from all around the world. And that was unprecedented for us. And I think more importantly, it proved that this model could work and there was a future in the virtual event space. And that really was a lifeline for us. So that is another one I point out. And finally, probably the most positive memory was just a couple of weeks ago when we held our summer reception in London, which was just a lot of fun. We had around 200 people come along for that. And to see people face to face again and to meet people who I'd met online for the first time was a lot of fun. And yeah, that was a really happy memory.
I can imagine. And the scary moments, I'm sure everybody would identify with that. So many people were furloughed across industries, and especially for parents with young children at home schooling. And when school is shut, how do you manage the extended workloads? And I agree with you that the PRCA conference last year was phenomenal. I think it was one of the best conferences I've ever attended. Actually, I would put it on par with in-person events. And it was so engaging and so brilliant. You said 700 people in person. Probably it would have been difficult to get 700 people into the room. So phenomenal. Some really good moments there. More than a year on, what has been the response from the industry? Has it been adequate? And do you have any examples of people who have stepped up with the response to the crisis?
So I think one of the great things about working for a professional body is that when a crisis hits, or when there are hard times, I think you see the very best in the industry. You see people volunteer their time. And fundamentally, I think crises like these bring out the whole point of a professional body, because it's all about community, it's all about networks, support, yeah, development, learning. And these are all the values that really come to the fore during a crisis. And they absolutely did for us last year. Within days, really, of the pandemic being declared, we were really inundated with requests from people who wanted to support. And as a result of that, we created our COVID-19 communications task force, which was really the vehicle for support that ran for the rest of the year. And it delivered a whole number of webinars, free consultation services to any businesses that needed help. And then alongside that, it also produced some really practical guidance on how to steer your agency through a downturn like this. And for many, it was a lifeline. And since then, we've been contacted by a lot of people who've been really grateful for the support that they've provided. And that was led by, I mentioned Tony Langham earlier, who's been hugely helpful in that regard, but also by Rachel Friend and Rod Cartwright as well. So yeah, all of those people, I think, deserve an immense amount of credit.
Yeah, amazing. That was a really huge initiative. I was a part of it, in the support and engagement from across the world, not just UK and Europe and US, but just across the world, every part of the world. That's amazing, phenomenal. And moving on, what are the accessibility guidelines that the PRC has launched in collaboration with Current Global? How did that come about?
So that came about through us speaking with George Coleman. So George is the CEO of Current Global. He's incredibly passionate about accessibility and inclusion. So George grew up with a deaf father, and really has been kind of pivotal in creating and driving best practice communications in terms of accessibility. So we've worked with George's team to produce quite a comprehensive guide. It's about 34 pages long, and it's really just packed with insight, tips, and templates that you can go away and apply to your own day-to-day role. But I mean, it is such a massive issue, and it's one that I feel like the industry is sleeping on at the moment. You have 15% of the world's population that have some form of disability of one form or another. And when you consider all of the collective buying power, you're talking about a massive audience which is currently being excluded. So for comms professionals, that's a real opportunity to engage a new audience, and that hopefully will be supported by the guidance that we've developed in partnership with Current Global.
Absolutely. As we are to be leading on advising clients on inclusion, I think we need to adopt the accessibility guidelines, and our industry has to be a bit more proactive in ensuring that they understand and they proceed with this. And for anyone who is interested, you can find it on the PRCA website. The accessibility guidelines are available there.
Yeah, I would just add that a lot of the changes for that are just really straightforward and simple. And I'll hold my hands up that I wasn't aware of quite how simple some of them were. So, for example, we've now put on in excess of 200 virtual events since the pandemic began. But we've only since working with George, we've realized how easy it is, for example, to include live audio captioning on Zoom events, which is something that we now advocate. Similarly, Microsoft Accessibility Checker, which is a really great free tool that anyone can use. And you can use it just in the way that you would with a spell checker. So there's lots of really simple and easy steps you can take to improve your comms and your accessibility.
PRCA has the Kickstarter scheme. So how did this partnership with the government come about, and what is the ambition behind that?
So Kickstart launched earlier last year, I think it was around March last year. Fundamentally, it's a scheme that's designed to support young people aged between 18 and 24 who are deemed to be most at risk of long-term unemployment as a result of the pandemic. Essentially, the scheme involves employers creating six-month placements and then being reimbursed for the salaries for those young people by the government. So essentially, the government is funding these placements. It's a really brilliant initiative. It's one that our members have responded to incredibly well. We've created over 80 roles for young people who would otherwise be on universal credit. And yeah, it's something that we're incredibly proud of. Obviously, the government seeing the urgent need to kind of help young people, because whenever there's a big crisis or an economic downturn on this scale, invariably it's young people who come off the worst. And we've got good relationships with the DWP and with other government departments. And we quite quickly recognised the benefit, not only to society for this, but for the PR industry. And we became a gateway organisation very quickly. So we are essentially helping members to take advantage of this scheme.
Absolutely brilliant, because in my conversations with several people and even with universities, I've heard how badly impacted young people are. I mean, generally, everyone has been impacted, but young people, I think even more so after such a tough year of the pandemic. The PRCS CMS is an extremely powerful tool. I think it's phenomenal in what it does. But I think because the PRCA has been promoting it for such a long time, it seems to be not so much on everybody's radar. And I'm sure the big agencies have signed on to it and have been doing this year in, year out. How can we make this a gold standard for inclusion and accessibility? Because it's similar and I think it's broader than a lot of the get started on your EDI journey or on compliance on EDI. I think it's a really powerful tool.
Yeah, it is. And it's something that I think globally is respected as kind of a hallmark or a kite mark of excellence in our industry. So for those that aren't familiar with it, the CMS stands for the Communication Management Standard, and it combines various elements of ISO 9001 and Investors in People with criteria that is specific to PR and communications. It's available to consultancies, it's available to in-house teams, and it's also available to virtual teams as well. So it was introduced a long time ago. It was introduced in 1998, and it's been continually updated. It covers various aspects, kind of business planning, financial management, client satisfaction, diversity, etc. But I think the good thing about CMS is that it's always kind of developing and it's always learning, because best practice itself is always moving, particularly in this industry. So we're always talking with industry experts, both in PR and outside the industry, on how it can be improved. And accessibility is certainly one of those areas that we're doing that on as well. But you quite rightly say, I think in this day and age, businesses are looking for more ways than ever to prove that they are not only committed to making profit, but actually just committed to being good businesses all around and having a positive impact on society. So the CMS is really a powerful vehicle for organizations of all types to be able to do that. And to be honest with you, it's proved very popular, particularly over the pandemic. There are a lot of agencies, large and small, and in-house teams as well, who are taking advantage of it. And the good thing is about once you've accredited and you've completed it, you're eligible for our matchmaker service, which is an opportunity to win new business as well.
Oh, that's brilliant. Any advice for those getting started on their DEI or EDI journey?
I think the first thing to say is that there's never been a better time, I think, to enter the industry. Personally, I've been hugely passionate about diversity and inclusion since I started working in the industry. I think that this is a great time because I think agencies and in-house teams have never been more aware of the need for change. So I think the fact that we have a new generation now who are able to come in and help create the change that this industry needs is really exciting. So my advice would be 100% committed to yourself and to your own personal values. Don't feel the need to assimilate or adjust, because it's in your interest and it's in the industry's interest for you to be true to yourself. And then on a more practical note, I think this has always been the case in PR. I think as much as you can, try and develop your networks, blog, access communities, use the PRCA's networks and services to try and build your profile. And yeah, I think it's an incredibly exciting time to work in the industry. So that would probably be my advice to the next generation.
Some brilliant advice there. Correct. What inspires you? Who inspires you and what motivates you every single day? Because I think in the last 18 months, we've seen more than ever before that we really need to be invested in what we do to turn up and be able to deliver well.
Yeah, that's a good question. There's probably like a professional and a non-professional example. On the non-professional side, I'd probably say my dad is probably my biggest inspiration. He's now 82, but he is in great shape, touch wood. So he's just an incredibly driven person who is incapable of standing still and always doing something. So he was born in quite primitive circumstances in the 1930s in Cyprus, and worked his way to London and built a small business. And even now, to this day, he's still working hard in various capacities. So I'd have to say him. And then in a professional capacity, I'd say Scott Galloway. He is a marketing professor at NYU. I'm just such a huge fan of his. And I find him really inspiring to listen to, because a lot of his advice is just about life and happiness and making sure that we're keeping sight of the things that are really important in our lives. And I think that is a really important one for those of us who work in a fast-paced industry like ours.
That's brilliant. Thank you so much, Corey, for being here today. I really appreciate your time.
It's a pleasure. Thanks very much for having you, and thanks for all your help on REEB and with the various PRCA initiatives, and of course for all your leadership on the EIAC as well. We're really grateful for all the brilliant work that you've put in.
Thank you for joining us this week on the Elephant in the Room podcast. Don't forget to subscribe to the show on any of your favorite platforms, iTunes, Spotify, Google Podcasts. And if you enjoyed listening to the podcast today, don't forget to write a review and tell your friends. Sign up on the link in the show notes to receive updates on our guest speakers, blogs, and events. And don't forget to tune in every Thursday for new episodes.